It's my dad had a wonderful way of doing it with my mom when we were kids. And he would tell me all the time, he's like, he's like, your mom's wrong. She knows she's wrong, but she's not going to tell you she's wrong until she comes out with a method of making sure that she came to it herself. No one showed her she was wrong. This was her own idea, and she's corrected it. Look what I have learned. Not that I learned that I was wrong, but I have learned this, and we're now doing this from now on. And my dad would help her get to that position. And I didn't realize how kind that was until I got in my own relationship and watched what a beautiful thing my dad did. He never put my mom down because my mom wasn't as confident as he was at that time, given her upbringing and everything else. So he gave her that space to take that time and for her to find a way to come out with that knowledge that, hey, this is how we're doing. Even though we all knew, it was a very kind way of him letting her come to that same position.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Easy Conversations podcast, a podcast about having easy conversations. I'm your host, Furkan Dandia. This week's episode, I welcome back my friend Kirk Coburn for a fourth time on this podcast. And he joins the show for an honest conversation about raising kids in an age of instant gratification, digital distraction, and social pressure. He shares real stories from the trenches of fatherhood, the son who checked out with a month left of school, the 12-kilometer walk that ended in tears and a breakthrough, and the quiet pride of watching a 14-year-old show up as a gentleman without being told to. But our conversation didn't stop at parenting. Kirk and I explored how the same principle that helped kids grow, which is tolerating discomfort, staying present, learning through failure, finding meaning in the climb, are the same ones that help us adults navigate a noisy and polarized, shame-driven world. We got into talking about addiction, faith, ego, debating culture, social media, and why we celebrate a flawed comic book hero's redemption arc, but refuse to give people the same grace. Kirk Coburn is an everyday dad navigating the chaos of modern parenting, sharing his mistakes and triumphs so others can find context and support in their own journeys. When he's not in dad mode, he's creating art. You can find his artwork on Instagram at W2ArtYYC. And before we jump into the episode, a quick reminder that the contents of this podcast have no affiliation with my therapeutic practice. The conversations are for educational and informational purposes only. If you do require support, please reach out to a licensed professional. Now let's just jump into the episode. Kirk, welcome back. We got it figured out.
We got it figured out. Technology didn't hold us back.
Yeah, I was like thinking, how many men is it going to take to figure this one out?
Obviously more than two.
Yeah. How have you been? We talked about things are good, you're training, but outside of that, how are things?
Things are good. It's funny, the spring weather has definitely shed a lot of nice light into my life. Yes. You get out of the doom and gloom of all the rain and the snow, and suddenly things just pick up.
Yeah, I actually noticed that. I was, in fact, reflecting on that very same thing yesterday. I took my motorcycle out, parked it in my office, and then I was walking downtown, and everyone just seemed to be happy, right? Everyone's smiling. So yeah, I forgot what this feels like. It's just a good feeling. Yeah.
It is. The sun does something special.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, but you seem to be very busy. What's going on in life?
In life itself, we got, of course, all the sports are going on at the end of school, which is creating a lot of interesting moments with the kids themselves. The oldest he's digging in, and the youngest, he's finding new ways to challenge us because of it. I'll tell you a quick story if you want on that. It's entertaining at the same time. Get a call from the principal, and it's grade six, of course, is last year, then goes into junior high. Get a call to come in, so I come down there, meet him, his teacher, and the principal. And I'm like, okay, what's going on? And the principal was like, nothing. I'm like, What do you mean nothing? She's like, no, nothing's happening. Absolutely nothing. He's not doing any work. He's not reading. He's not doing any math. He's not doing any of it. He's just stopped doing everything. So I'm like, oh, that's not very good. So I ask him, I'm like, why? What's going on? And he's like, so there's a month left of grade six. I don't have to come back here. I don't have to do anything. So he's like, I'm like, you got your PSA tests and everything else. He's like, they don't mean anything. I don't have to do anything. So I'm just like, oh, okay. So yeah, we had some interesting challenges, and we had to find some creative ways to get some motivation into them. And so I myself am training, like you said, I'm quite busy. So I'm training for an ultra that's out in Cranbrook here, and I'm on a nice long run with me to show him that there's other things you have to work for in life, and you got to work hard, and it's not always comfortable, and sometimes you don't see the point of it. And by the time we were done our run, he was really motivated to go back to school and do some work.
Really? Yeah. So yeah, that's interesting, right? Because I see this a lot with people in general, but even children. How do you get them to see things a different way, especially if they're dragging their feet, right? So a lot of the times, and this is a bit more recent for me because I was at a family law conference. I came back last weekend, and there was a lot of conversations around how to motivate children and the role parents have to play. And sometimes getting lost in being able to ask yourself, okay, am I doing this because I want my child to succeed? And what is it in it for them? And interestingly enough, I was reading a book, The Courage to be Disliked. And the same idea in that book, right? A lot of the times parents will ask their children to do certain things because they're worried about the shame that it would cause for them as a parent. So how do you then figure out a way to, like you said, you were able to find a way to motivate him and he had a shift in perspective, but he's dragging his feet. It's always interesting, right? Where do you pull back and say, okay, this is your life to figure out too, but as a guide, as a parent, where do I take you?
Actually, that's probably the most interesting thing. I found that I really need to dive into the, how do I back up when it comes to my 14-year-old? So for him, I give him a lot of space, and now it's how do I help him navigate his failures rather than helping him find his success? Because in my mind, his success is up to him at this point. So we've been able to instill a lot of confidence into him to a degree. And now I think he needs to take that to the next step to find the motivation of what he wants. With the younger one, it's really interesting in the sense that he's not as motivated on anything to do that he doesn't like to do. And I think the hardest part we're fighting against in our struggle with this is anything digital and anything at school is instant gratification. His main likes that he enjoys doing right now. So he plays high-end soccer and a few other things. He's very good at. So there's no real fight through these difficult moments to find pleasure in the ability to overcome things that are difficult. And so my thought process with him was, I'm not there to strictly be a friend or to make things easy for him. I need to show him as a parent that through hard work and through consistent work, the discipline to do that, you actually find a lot of things that create not pleasure, but happiness. Once again, that differentiation between happiness and pleasure and a motivation that the climb is just as important as the view from the top of the mountain. So working through them, motivating them through difficult things multiple times where he sees that trend where it's like, okay, I got into this. I didn't like it. However, I worked through it and I got what I wanted out of it. Because typically he would get into something, he would get difficult and off to the next thing. And I think you're right. So even for my oldest, right now he's looking between rowing and running. And because he wants to get a phone, and I'm not keen on teens or preteens having phones. And I said, if you earn it, you can essentially look at maybe getting yourself a phone. And he's like, how do I earn it? And I'm like, but you can get a job. You're 14 years old. You're allowed to have a job in Alberta. Go and get one. And he's like, what, you want me to do a high-end sport? I won't have time to do the job. So I said, okay, we can look at that as a job. And if you commit yourself and you do the hard work and you find through struggle that you're finding success, but you don't give up on something, every day you're there and every hour you're there putting in the time, I will put something into a bank account or into some sort of per se bank account where you can debit and credit from there and do something with it. And for him, that's motivating. For the youngest one, he's very entrepreneurial. So I think I have to step in as a much harder parent and not know that, okay, right now I just can't be his friend. I've got to be the hard guy and I've got to put him through it and have him learn this through a much more difficult scenario versus my older one. And I think as parents, it's up to us to step in, take that risk of maybe your kid not liking you in that moment. And in the reality, that's your job as a parent in my mind.
Yes. To guide them, right? And help them learn the lessons for sure. So how do you get him to, like, the younger one, to get him, how long was the run? How do you get him to come for a run? And what lesson do you think he took out of it?
He'll tell you at school. His teacher literally said, Walker, I need you to pay attention and do this. And he's like, you know what? You're right, because I don't want to do another run.
Okay. There you go.
So it was funny. I said, in the past, we used the treadmill and a few other things. And I was like, okay, you need to understand that life just isn't about living within pleasurable moments or doing what you please. I said, we've got to be part of society and we've got to put the work in to make sure that other people other than ourselves are finding success. And we do that by actually sowing. You don't necessarily see the harvest. You got to sow first. You got to put that seed in the soil. You got to water it every day before you get your grain or your crop. And then that didn't quite work. So I was like, okay, I told him, we could do a 4-kilometer run if you run hard and I see that you can't necessarily talk because you're running so hard, you need 4 kilometers that whole way. That's good. I said, if you do that, fine. I said, we could do a 6-kilometer run where you can somewhat have a conversation. And by the time you're done there, you'll see that was a lot of work. It might be very uncomfortable by the time you're done. And I want you to be very uncomfortable by the time you're done. So now that you could do hard things or you could walk and we could do 12 kilometers. And he's the type of guy, he's like, I am running for you. I'm like, oh, okay. So we started walking and the one thing he hates more than anything else is being bored. So we got about 6 kilometers out and walking and he's, this is torture, Dad. He's, I'm so sorry. I don't want to do this anymore. But I said, we're 6 kilometers from the house. We got to walk all the way back. And so we actually ran back and he had some tearful moments and everything else. And we talked about the purpose of what this was for. And by the time we got back, it's interesting. I think you've discussed this at some point too. We had enough alone time away where the conversations between us went past the normal, this is what I want, this is very superficial things, into emotionally charged items that were holding him back or that he was concerned about or that he had fear about or guilt or anything else while being in class. So we started to have some real conversations about the class. And it, by the time we were done the 12-kilometer run, his feet were hurting. He didn't have the great shoes on. He had a blister. But I was like, dude, you've never done 12 kilometers before. Mm-hmm. This is pretty good. So he's like, I feel like that was a huge accomplishment. I don't necessarily want to ever do that again. But we had also given each other enough time to come to the same place on why this last little bit of school was so important. And in some ways, too, I think I just needed to wear him out mentally and physically to a point where he could hear something, where he wasn't looking for that next instant gratification of the TV, of something else, of the, fine, I'm just going to do this with my buddy over here. It was like, no, we have all of this time for you to get into a place where you can actually understand what I'm saying to you and I can understand what you're saying to me. We can have an honest conversation about where we need to be. So it was a much different conversation with him compared to my older one.
Yeah. And I like that because, yes, you got him away from the distractions and created that space of, I guess, one of the other things is that vulnerability just comes naturally, right? Where you're like feeling broken down in a way, right?
Yes.
And it brings up, like, you could still try to hold it together, quote unquote, but it's an opportunity to be vulnerable that, hey, this really sucks. But then it brings up other emotions that perhaps you've buried.
It was absolutely that, especially for him. Because I think at this age, they're so worried about image. They're so worried about fitting in. So they don't like to discuss anything that seems that they may not be fitting in. And for him, one of the biggest things he was struggling with in class was the idea that he was going to a new school. His teacher wasn't going to be the same. There was going to be a bunch of change. And he was already feeling as if he was going to find failure. But I'm like, that's all in the future, bud. You're ruining today with the fears of tomorrow. Mm-hmm. We got to live presently right now. And we got to talk to ourselves rationally right now to say, why are you sacrificing yourself now for something that hasn't even happened yet? So we had an hour or so to work through that.
Right.
2 hours by the time we were done. It was nice because, like you said, he became vulnerable. He opened up the idea, especially once he was done with his anger. For him, it's frustration and anger, then, of course, sadness and remorse and everything else. And then it's, okay, I can listen. He goes through that wave of emotions before he gets into a place where he can actually comprehend what's being said to him. Rather than being defensive, he starts to listen.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty cool experience because you've also shown him what it feels like to be seen and heard. And I have a lot of conversations with parents around that too, where there's like, I don't know what to do. And you try to dismiss it or even try to diagnose the problem, but it's recognizing even as adults, we struggle to put words to our feelings.
Yes. So
imagine a child whose brain isn't fully developed and doesn't have the vocabulary. How are they supposed to put it into words that the experience he's having right now with the upcoming change? That's a pretty cool story. What did you learn about yourself in that?
It was interesting because we had a lot of success over the last couple of months with him. And then you let yourself kind of get comfortable with that success. And in doing that, we had a lot of really good moments. So for myself, it was a good check on the idea that it was humbling. I was like, okay, I got to be a bit of an asshole in my mind, right? Like, I got to be like, no, I'm not your friend right now. And to be honest with you, I said that to him. I said, I am your parent right now. I'm not your friend. We're going to go do some uncomfortable things. I need you to understand the purpose of this is for you to be uncomfortable and to understand it's okay to be uncomfortable and to work through that. And I'm going to be here with you and I'm uncomfortable as we're doing this as well. So being really, really vulnerable with him. And I didn't like it. I didn't like it. And I think he could sense that I didn't like it. But the big thing for me coming out of that was it was worth it. My fears of letting him down and saying that to him and being that type of parent. By the time we were done, it was like, I knew in my heart it was the right thing to do. But my brain was saying like, whoa, bud, are you going to do this with him? Are you going to say this to your kid? And I did. And by the time we walked out together, we both came out with a lesson learned. That's probably the best way to put it.
No, that's awesome. So what now, obviously going through this journey of fatherhood, what do you most look forward to? And I guess in addition to that, appreciate about this role?
I think here's a great example. My oldest will be, if he ever hears this, he's going to be disgusted I even mentioned this. But he's 14 and he's like, hey, Dad, I'm going to invite a girl over. And I'm like, oh, okay. And I'm like, is this okay with her parents? Do you want us to meet her parents first or anything like that? And he's like, gosh, no. I don't necessarily want you to meet her. I'm like, oh, okay. But I was like, that's not going to happen. And he's like, I know. And I'm like, what are you worried about? He's like, I'm worried you're going to say something and embarrass me. I said, well, of course I am. And he's like, I know. But I said, I'll do my best not to. I said, I appreciate you vocalizing that now because I want to make sure that as she comes over, you're comfortable and she's comfortable with the environment in our house. And so this sweet little gal comes over to the house and he's essentially, I just said, hey, just make sure that the house is clean. That it's in a place where you would like someone to see that this is where you live and this is how you live and this is how you carry yourself. I want you to be proud of what you're willing to show someone else that's within your life. So he said, okay. He cleaned his room. He cleaned everything else up. He cleaned the house. He worked with us to do it. And then he pre-made popcorn for her. He pre-made some snacks. He had a movie all lined up. And none of this was brought on or suggested by me or my wife.
Yeah.
And just watching him do this and how he greeted her at the door and he brought her in and how he introduced us, her to both me and my wife. He was an extreme gentleman and he was thoughtful of her position of meeting some new parents and everything else. It was a super proud dad moment.
Yeah.
It was a super proud dad moment. And they sat on the couch to watch a romantic movie that I think neither of them thought was a great idea by the time we were done. But it was so cute because she sits down and he sits down in the chair across from her. And she's like, you could sit next to me. And he's only if you're comfortable with that. So he was asking for permission and everything else. And I was like, all right. We've done our job. And it was funny too, because by the time he walked her home, he came back to the house. It was like, he thanked us for not interrupting them too much, but how we introduced ourselves. And I said, what did you learn from this? And he was like, I took away from this a certain amount of things. He was like, we talked about her family. We talked about a number of things, but when she was going home, I said, I hope you had a good time and you would like to come back to my house. And her answer was, I had a wonderful time at your house and I would love to come back to your house. Mm-hmm. And I was like, perfect. I said, what does that mean for you? He said, for me, that just means that our family kicks ass, Dad. We're doing it right. And I was just like, perfect. What an awesome thing, right?
Yeah.
That your kid can't wait to bring other kids, especially his possible girlfriend, over to your home to meet you as a family. He's proud of his family. And I just thought that was like one of the coolest moments ever. And then seeing, I think we've talked about this in previous episodes, yourself in your kids as well. The youngest, he's so funny because he's in a very aggressive soccer player. And I love to see him growing and how clever he is at other things. Before they actually get into a game, he'll go and he introduce himself to each one of the refs. He'll learn the ref's name. He'll learn where they're from. He'll learn how long they've been playing soccer for. So when he gets out on the field and he does something that's questionable, you're like, oh, I'm so sorry, ref XYZ.
Yep.
I didn't mean to do such a thing. Like, how dare I? I will do it again. And like, okay, don't worry about it. Just get back on there and play soccer. So he's a little, I can see how clever he is. And he's smart enough to be like working the system, but it also helps me help him later on to be like, okay, you can't just take advantage of people and you can't do this, you can't do that.
Right.
But I have to admire how his creativity and what he's doing and his thought process and how he gets around this stuff. So really seeing them grow as people is a beautiful thing right now. And still how vulnerable they are and how they've got so much more to grow. And looking back at that time, and it helps solidify a lot of things that we've done or things that we're still doing. And I think that's the best thing about this age.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like he's building that personal relationship right now. Figuring out how to navigate that is a different skill, right? But yeah, not take advantage of it for sure. But yeah, he'll be good at selling things, right?
He's already too good at selling things.
Yeah,
he'll do something. It's one of those things where we talk about it, not to be joking about it or whatever else. I'm like, if I can keep him off drugs long enough where he can find enough confidence where he doesn't need that to feel whole, then I think he's going to be fine as a human being.
I guess those are real fears, right? I think can't remember who I was talking to, but it must have been fairly recent. But the whole idea of sheltering your children and also letting them see the reality of the world, right? The darkness of the world, to be able to see it for what it is. And it's not something that, because I feel like if they haven't at least encountered it to a certain extent or even understood it, when they confront it for the first time, it could basically take them apart, right? So it's that fine balance again in terms of being a parent and either the extreme of sheltering versus exposing them to everything, but finding that in between place, which is so difficult, obviously, right?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. We have to acknowledge that the world is not innocent. There are things that are ugly and are hurtful and harmful. And a lot of it comes into people's lives in innocent moments. I was watching a comedian the other day, and he was like, I don't know why my parents were so afraid of some stranger giving me drugs. Oh, don't accept anything from strangers. A stranger will never give you drugs. It will be your best friend. Mm-hmm. That's who's going to give you drugs. And I was like, you know, that's 100% the truth, right? Yeah. It's not going to be someone you don't know or anything else. And so a lot of the times, the kids fall into this in innocent ways. Mm. And so you're right. So with the youngest, we actually went on a little motorcycle trip the other day. So he loves to hop on the back of the bike. And we went down to 17th Ave, which is like a main strip here. And we went and I got a coffee and he got a chocolate milk. And we sat there and we walked up and down. And there we have a fentanyl problem in our city. And we ran into a couple of individuals who were not having the best time. And they were obviously extreme addicts of rather fentanyl or another hard drug. And essentially we had a conversation about them. And at first, because society loves to tell us, how dare they be here and how dare they do this? I changed the narrative to, do you think that they wanted this life? Mm-hmm. Do you think that when they first tried drugs that they thought they would be here? And the answer, of course, was absolutely no. No one chooses that life. Mm-hmm. It is armor for something that they are going through that it got them through at that point in their lives. It could be trauma, it could be whatever else, but whatever that drug made them feel is something that they needed in that part of their lives. Mm-hmm. And it was so powerful to them that they could not let that go. Mm-hmm. And so I said, I want to make sure that you are in a position in your life where no drug will make you feel something that you can't give yourself. Mm. And I said, until that you are sure of that within your lives, I ask you to not go there. Because essentially, this person did not choose this life. Mm-hmm. So they fell into it out of innocence for the most part, or trying to get away from something and found themselves here. So no one wants that. So it was a really interesting conversation. I think he understood for the most part. And I think that's one of those conversations you need to have 1,000 times for it to be heard once. Mm-hmm. But by like you said, by not hiding him from that situation, or having those hard conversations where like, just don't talk to them, or they're just drug addicts, or just let's walk to the other side of the street and be like, they are people.
Yes.
They just made a bad choice. We all make bad choices and there's held on. So how do we make sure that we don't make the same bad choice?
Yeah. And one of the things I've learned working in that space is ultimately, at least in my observation, it comes back to relationships. And we tend to put so much pressure on ourselves, whether it's directed at us in terms of relationships we have, or perhaps something was missing. We may not have been seen or heard, or we had to caretake. So a lot of that pressure, unfortunately, then manifests into whatever substance people choose, or whatever addiction they choose for themselves. And unfortunately, we often focus on what that choice is as opposed to what's the root cause. And the root cause is often, at least, like I said, what I've observed is relational. It is kind of tied to what we're talking about, because again, if you're putting in that time and nurturing that relationship as a parent with your child, and there's not, based on what you shared, there's no shame, there's no, hey, you should know better, or what are you doing? And look how this makes me feel. All these things, there's none of that there. It's all removed. That just makes it that much easier for that relationship to just have that connection.
Perfect. I think you're right. I think it all goes back to how we create that foundation of a relationship and what that means. And if someone's confident that they can find the emotional balance throughout their personal relationships, if it's with their family, friends, or other people within their lives, then they don't need to rely on exterior stimulants to get them there. And I think that's one of the things we need to do better within our families and within all relationships, work, the whole nine yards. We tend to focus on pleasure, or we tend to focus on what we think is going to get us there, which is money, status, and everything else. Yeah, I think that's a great point.
And the other thing, I guess, is you touched on earlier too, the phones, right? That's just another form of addiction that
We don't necessarily, we talk about it, but we really don't, because we're also giving it to children at a younger age, mm-hmm. or they have access to things that perhaps you and I didn't as we were growing up. So that just introduces another challenge for them, where they're just, a lot of children, unfortunately, numb themselves out on video games or smartphones or other forms of devices, unfortunately.
It's true. It's true. And I think we run into the fear of, you rather let your kids have a phone and they get eaten up by the corporations that spend billions of dollars to know exactly how to pull as much dopamine as possible into the brain and find them to be addicted. Or you don't give them a phone at all and they'll never be part of society. They'll never be successful. They'll never be this. They'll never be that. And it's, I think it's one of those things too, where it's like, it's politics in the most, where I'm sure there's a nice middle ground. And I think the middle ground is different for each individual kid, depending on their needs. And I think you just need to be conscious of, really, it's funny. I think we need to be educated, or we need to educate ourselves on how the brain releases dopamine and how the brain releases serotonin, to be aware of what we can help our kids to navigate. So when it comes to tablets and everything else, my kids have game machines. They've got all that. But he's like, oh, yeah, I want to watch YouTube. And it's like, okay, well, what are you doing? He's like, I want to learn how to draw this. I'm like, okay, that sounds awesome. But I said, you can't watch a video that's shorter than 15 minutes. And he's like, why is that? I said, if you click on a video, you have to watch that video from start to end. I don't want you just cycling through something until something hits your fancy, and then you need to go to the next one and the next one and the next one. So it's okay, you can get on there, but I need you to go in, become engaged, pay attention, understand what it's teaching you, come out with a lesson, and then go away with it. I don't want you going in there and just being massively stimulated, like essentially they ideally want you to. So in my way, that's my happy medium with him right now. So it's, and in some ways I'm really glad he has that, because he loves drawing, and he loves drawing comic books. And a lot of these guys show him how to draw all these different comic book characters, and he finds a lot of joy in completing these drawings. And if I said no to all of that, he wouldn't be drawing them, because I'm not, I love art and we do a lot of art in the house, but I don't draw comic book characters. So it's like, he was able to find something he enjoyed. We just had to find a happy medium where we both were satisfied that he's not just falling into a trap, or if he is falling into a trap, we can pay attention to what he's actually doing and be aware of it and help him navigate through it or out of it.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So again, I'm just hearing that, finding that fine line and having that conversation and negotiating, right? And again, that's one thing I feel that sometimes we can, or children perhaps don't learn, is that negotiation, that it's not like a firm no, but it's not a yes. We have to find a happy medium. And I think that helps them also learn how to foster other relationships, because everything's a bit of a negotiation, especially in romantic relationships, right? You have to find some common ground. Yeah. So I think it's important to teach those skills. But you talked about the innocence, and you talked about the state of the world, and without getting too political in terms of where things are in the world today, and we can see that whether you pick a side or you don't, how do you have conversations around that, right? Without, I think the challenge can be, obviously you're biased, everyone is biased to a certain extent, and perhaps you pass on your own worldviews and perceptions to your children, but how do you also foster the ability to keep an open mind and not necessarily go down a specific rabbit hole, as hard as that can be at times?
Yeah, I think that's probably the hardest thing to navigate. I think you're right. I think a long time ago, I read something where the individual stated, generally for all people, for most people, they do not go into something with ill intention. They generally try to go into something with good intention. Now, that becomes harder and harder when we start to look at today's politics and today's news and everything else, because I think much like anybody, it's not newsworthy unless it's on either one of the spectrums, like it's far left or far right. In the middle, it's really not news. So I think with the kids, like my youngest loves to come home and he likes to be like, Donald Trump is the devil and he's doing this. And I'm like, oh, okay. Do you know he's doing that? And he's no. So I'm like, why are we saying it? I said, he might be doing that. I said, there could be speculation that such a thing is happening. But I said, at the same time, if we don't truly know what's going on, we need to make sure that we are informing us ourselves appropriately of what is actually going on. I said, our reach only goes so far when it comes to what the truth is. And then really having that conversation about what is the truth. We have our truth, they have their truth, and there's third truth of what actually might be in the middle that's not on either side of the bias. So for us, a lot of the times, it comes back to sheltering them, but in the sense where I have a lot of conversations. This is my view on what's going on, and I will walk on both sides of the conversation to show that I'm doing my best not to be single-minded on a certain side. Because I think for myself, so looking at politics, looking at morality, everything else, I think I'm very down the middle. I'm neither major conservative. I'm not super liberal on the other side either. And I don't know if anybody truly is. I think we all want to make sure that we have great neighbors. Our neighbors are taken care of. Our family is healthy. We're fiscally responsible. And we're doing our best to make a difference in society moving forward, that tomorrow is a better place for our kids, and the years after that are a better place for our grandkids. And we do that by ensuring that we are looking out for the best of society. But what that best of society is questionable. And I think that is the most important thing that we need to give grace for on all sides. I can't even remember. It might have even been The Dude in the Buddhist, which was this book that Jeff Bridges was writing. There's a famous quote in there from where it's like, don't follow the best Christian, don't follow the best Buddhist, don't follow the best Muslim, follow the best atheist, which was an interesting thought process, because he doesn't do it for anything other than for the sake of doing what is right for the sake of right. And I thought that was an interesting statement, because so aid that. And so it's like, I try to bring that back many levels and many steps back to the kids to be like, okay, like you could say that, politics can say this, but what does that mean for our family? What does that mean for you and how you approach your friends? I need you to think of what that statement says, and let's have that conversation. Like you said, it's a lot about creating that relationship and saying, okay, if that was real, what would we do as a family? How do we navigate this as a family if that was real? And I think for the big part about that too, is like, it's putting the importance on that you don't have to do this alone. It's, what do we do as a family? What do we do at school? What do we do with our teachers? What do we do with our friends, if this was real? How do we move through this? I think my youngest, he can tend to have a lot of anxiety. Also, he's okay. Yeah. I wouldn't be alone in that. I'm like, no, you're not. Like, we would all feel this. And how do we get through it together? And that's the big push, is, okay, this would be terrible. Great. How do you make sure that this isn't terrible for yourself and your brother? How do you make sure that this isn't terrible for yourself and your neighbor? How do you make sure? What do you guys do to get around such a problem? And if that was the case, like, no matter what politically comes through or whatever happens in a lot of these cases, we will have each other as backup to find our ways through. It's to me, Dame, like hope.
Yes, absolutely. Hope is definitely important, right? But I think the other thing I keep coming back to is humility as well, because if I've already told myself I have the answer, then I'm not open to learning. And I'm not open to engaging in a discussion, even if it's with someone who perhaps has a different view, right? And I've shared this before. For me, I can engage with someone even if they have a completely polar opposite view and ideology than I do, because that to me means I'm confident in my beliefs. If I'm insecure, then of course I'm not going to engage, right? Because I'm worried that they may prove me wrong. And we're more likely, as we like comfort, we like the familiar. So the way I frame it in my head is, I'm confident in my belief, but if someone can convince me then I'm happy to learn as well. And if I can find a new way of thinking about things, I'm all for that. As long as it's done in a respectful manner, I'm happy to engage and have a discussion and get some thoughts and, yeah, educate myself. But in that process, the best case scenario is we both, if it's two people, we both walk away learning something new. That's my hope in that. But that obviously requires humility.
It does. And I think you're right. And I think one of the things we've lost the most is the ability to debate. The idea that to debate something is to argue or
to win
a negative context. And to win. And true learning and discussion is not to win. Mm-hmm. There's no winning in it. It is enlightenment of what another view might be. Mm-hmm. And it's weird. There's this almost a cultish vision now where it's like, oh, if that's your opinion on this, then you must be that. Mm-hmm. And let's just back up here and understand that everything is very complex and it's never just black or white in a lot of things. And without being able to have confidence within yourself, be respectful about someone else's idea and debate your personal view, we do not learn. That essentially, I think I love stories. Right. No one goes into a story saying, I know everything that this story has to tell us. Why the hell are you reading?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's so funny in the sense that society likes to go in, watch TV series and everything else to prove themselves right. If you, the funniest thing is, I was talking to this gal and she's, oh, I love watching murder shows about people who've murdered people. And I was like, society is already terrible enough. I don't want to watch hours of why people are murdering each other. Right. She's, no, I like to watch it because it's like, I can guess who the murderer is already. And I know exactly what's going on. I was like, that's even worse. In my mind, it was, why do you want to watch something to prove that you know how horrible that society is? And you can pick this out within people. I said, that's a terrible skill to want to hone. And it was funny because in some ways the conversation was, that's what I like, so just leave it.
Yes. Huh. Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So, even with stories, right? Sometimes perhaps even myself at times, we may reject the absurdity of the story that, oh, that's impossible that something like that could happen. But that's their story. That's their truth. And I feel like if we had the same perspective when we're having a discussion with someone, that's if you and I are perhaps in disagreements, that's your version of the truth. Who am I to argue that and try to convince you otherwise? And I find often, even in marriage or relationships, sometimes people have the view that I want to be right and I want to prove my partner wrong. Sure, even if you accomplish that, what have you now done to your partner, right? Like, how good do you feel? Like, you've
that
basically
relationship.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Where do you sit in that relationship now? Where is that trust? Where do you sit in those important emotional spaces where you're vulnerable when you want to prove someone wrong? And it's okay to, and I think where we get back to is how we, there's something on both sides of that too, where someone, the hard part of society now, when we prove someone wrong, we want to do it on video and we want to do it where we can publicly shame someone at the same time. So it was interesting because my kids went to a dance and I'm like, why are you guys dancing? Why are you all just standing around? And then someone, I was talking about this to someone else. I'm like, oh, it's because all these kids are on video. And I was like, what do you mean? Everything that they do is being videotaped by someone on their phones or anything else. So they don't want to put themselves out there to possibly look stupid or not cool or doing the wrong thing. So they don't do anything. And so much like you said, in a relationship, if, because that's what we're saying in society, that you're always, this is going to be a reflection of you all the time because you're, we fear being wrong. And also how we approach it now is, I'm going to show you how wrong you are. And there's a vicious edge to it. It's not just, I'm going to prove you wrong. I'm going to make you feel stupid about it. And when that comes to a relationship, especially with your wife or your kids or someone else, That should be the last thing we do.
Yeah.
It's my dad had a wonderful way of doing it with my mom when we were kids. And he would tell me all the time, he's like, if he's like, your mom's wrong, she knows she's wrong, but she's not going to tell you she's wrong until she comes out with a method of making sure that she came to it herself. No one showed her she was wrong. This was her own idea, and she's corrected it. Look what I have learned. Not that I learned that I was wrong, but I have learned this, and we're now doing this from now on. And my dad would help her get to that position. And I didn't realize how kind that was until I got in my own relationship and watched what a beautiful thing my dad did. He never put my mom down, because my mom wasn't as confident as he was at that time, given her upbringing and everything else. So he gave her that space to take the time and for her to find a way to come out with that knowledge that, hey, this is how we're doing. Even though we all knew, it was a very kind way of him letting her come to that same position. So it was them knowing each other at that same time.
Yeah. And I think what I hear in that is to be able to separate yourself from the ego, right? So I had a growth moment, if I can share one. So
yes, please.
I was having a conversation with someone I respect and look up to and often seek guidance from. And we were debating something, and he was adamant that he was right and just wrong. And this was happening in front of other people. And in the past, my tendency would have been to pull it up on Google and be like, look, right, I'm right. But I didn't. I did look it up and I was right. But then I was like, you know what? There's no point in proving it and showing it to this person, because they can go find out on their own. But if they truly believe they're right, then who am I to change that for them, right? Because what I sense in that exchange was the person was not willing to relent. So if I would have felt that opportunity, then perhaps I would have been like, hey, by the way, I looked it up. This is what it is. But in the moment, I chose not to. Now, I don't know if that was a missed opportunity for them, but they have access to the internet as well. So yeah.
Yeah, I think the lovely part of that is the one thing to take out of that for myself when I hear that story is when I'm arguing, to make sure that I'm not positioning myself where someone doesn't want to push the agenda out of fear of me rejecting them as I am debating or as I am having those conversations, to make sure that I'm positioning myself to really let them show me everything that's within their deck of cards rather than bangs. Because I can tend to do it. I'm very animated. I am very confident when it comes to my positions as well. And in those moments, I can overpower someone just with persona, maybe even more than the actual facts of what's going on, because I'm being a bigger personality than them at the same time. So that's an interesting thing for me to hear too, to be like, okay, if it's very sensitive or very important situations for me to learn, I need to make sure that I'm providing space for that person to make sure that they are able to show me everything that's within their hand of what they're trying to prove.
Yeah. And I think for me in the past, if it was the way it happened in front of other people, my ego would have definitely been bruised and I would have been like, how dare you? I'm going to show you. And then even gone out of my way to be like, look, right. Even if it was alone and not in front of those other people. But I think for me, the experience too was like sometimes, and I think this is just something I constantly need to work on for myself, is I am my harshest critic and I tend to beat myself up quite a bit. But then in that too, like I look up to this person, right? So I'm almost pedestaled them, but it's realization that he's human too. He's also got his quirks, and that's okay, right? I don't have to take that and dismiss all of the individual. There's still a lot of value I get from my relationship with this person, and I can just focus on that. And the other stuff is okay. It's there, right? I'm sure we all have those things. And
That's very true. Someone once said to me, we all know the famous saying, try to never meet your hero because you'll always be disappointed. Because essentially they have flaws. And to me, that was almost the reverse of the reality of the moment. Go meet your heroes to understand that they do have flaws and that they are human. right? And in a reality, give yourself a fucking break, because if you idolize this guy and he is just as human as you are, or her or whatever, and they are just as human as you are, why are you not giving yourself the same compassion? That's one of those things where it's like, we need to, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, I feel like in society today, we've taken that away, right? So the more of a presence you have, more of an influence you have, the more people will kick dirt on you when you're down. And it's like we've taken away from that. Hey, that person's human too, and they're more vulnerable and exposed. So yes, you may see things from time to time where they're not at their best.
Yeah.
Why do we need to put them down? And I feel like often it's the comparison and shame mindset we live in, because we don't feel good about ourselves. So it's, oh, when we see someone else fail, it's like, all right, this is my opportunity to feel better. But how long does that last?
How true. And I think the worst thing, yeah, you're right. So who would want to be a hero? In today's society, who would want to put themselves in a position where millions of people will shame you who do not even know you?
Mm-hmm.
As strong as your ego is, as strong as your personal boundaries are, I'm sure that will have some effect on you no matter what. Mm. When it seems as if the world is out to just tear you down over something that they vaguely understand about you. That, in a lot of ways, that's a slippery slope at the same time. And at the same moment, what we fail to do is praise people for progression. What we love to do, which I fear, is we pull something up that someone did 10 years ago. And we say, this is what you did 10 years ago. And they're like, yeah, but this is what I'm doing now. Yeah, but you did that 10 years ago. You're obviously a piece of shit. I might have been, or society might have been different at that time. Yeah. But look at how I've grown since then. And we don't want to acknowledge that. We just want to acknowledge, hey, you did this. And that is one of the worst things, because as people, as our children, why don't we say, okay, you've made a mistake, but let's grow from that. And if we don't show how important growth is, or how much gratitude or grace we can give growth, then essentially kids will stop looking at that as an alternative to have people view them differently. That's a scary ass thought.
Yeah. And the message it sends is that you'll be defined by your mistakes, not what you learn from them. Right. So.
Yeah. And it's funny too, because if I look at any comic book hero or any idolized TV star, essentially the whole program is they had this defining moment where something terrible happened and they actually did terrible things too. And then they overcame such terrible things. And then they moved on to help society. We're willing to watch that day in and day out. But when it comes to someone's actual life, we're like, shame.
Yeah.
How dare you do such a thing? It's just, an odd double standard.
Mm-hmm. So how do you make sense of things then for yourself?
Ooh, yeah, that's a great question. I think for myself, I ground myself a lot in all ways. I get out and I step away from society as much as possible to empty my thoughts in places where it's a vacuum for that noise. If it's in nature itself, if it's through different meditational processes, if it's through different mental activities where I'm able to change my perspective, I go and I do that on a regular basis, almost hitting the reset button on the old default mode mechanism to be like, okay, I understand I've built these grooves and these pathways within my thought process. How do I disrupt that to make sure that I'm not falling in trap of what is going on around me?
Yeah.
And I think I do that through space, through giving myself space to let the echoes fall and work through that time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What about you?
Yeah. Similar, like I definitely need to ground myself and get space. And for me, that is in nature. So winters can be tough at times. But I think just my connection to faith, So someone asked me, is that because you're Muslim? And I was like, I think anyone can find a relationship with God. It doesn't have to be based on religion. For me, my faith facilitates that relationship, but it's always there, right? So it just makes it that much more easier for me to connect to God. And I find that a lot in nature as well. And I definitely need that connection because it helps me realize that whatever thing I'm focused on or that's consuming my mental space or my energy or my emotions doesn't matter at the end of the day because I feel held in those moments. Yes. And there's a trust. And I guess that's how I would describe faith for me is, okay, yes, I'm human. I'm having my experience. I'm upset. I'm anxious. Perhaps I'm having some anger, but you got me and I'll trust. And over time, through various life experiences, I'm able to fall back on that trust a lot sooner than I used to. And so then I don't ruminate about things. But yeah, I wake up every morning and I know there's a plan and I just have to do my part. And that's to just do the best I can for me and then everyone else around me, whether it's my immediate family, my children, my community, my neighbors, everyone then benefits from just that, right? So,
yeah. I love that, actually. I think that's one of the best descriptions of how important religion can be in someone's life. What I love about that statement is that, almost to tie it back to what we were talking about earlier, is that is another example of relationship and how relationship is so important within our lives. Mm. That is a relationship that provides you comfort and space in all moments, no matter how dark or how lonely or remote or anything else. Having that faith in God for yourself to be like, it's okay to give yourself and to submit to something like that, to essentially work through all of that pain and everything else. I think where we fall short, where society falls short, when we look at religion, people tend to see it as a strict set of rules that someone must live by. And it's not a relationship. It is an overlord of procedures. And I think that was one of the more beautiful descriptions of what religion can be. And it is a relationship. And that's it. Yeah. So I think you're spot on. And I appreciate you sharing that.
Thank you. Yeah. No. And the other thing I would add is, yes, it's rules. If that's where you want to look, everything is a reflection of our inner state. Right. So it may seem like rules to you if you feel confined. To me, it's freedom because it's here's choices you can make. You have free will. Go do whatever you want. But if you go by this set of actions, your life will be better. And that's the beauty of free will. You can choose. You can choose everything you want. And I know for me, when it's like how we were talking about parenting, right? Yes. You can do all this, but if you think about it from this perspective, it might actually help you. Do the harder things and you'll benefit from it, right? So that's how I look at least faith for me is like, I can say there are rules and people might say, oh, it's a form of control or it's oppressive. It's but that's how you want to look at it. But it can also be freedom because by making certain choices, you experience life better and more fulfilling. And that to me is freedom. And it's, the delayed gratification.
It's true. It's true. And I think of that too, like to bring that even further, the aspect of the parent, I've done my best to, at some point through the growth of my children, to steer them away from pain. But at some point, I encourage them to go through pain. To learn certain things within themselves that will truly help paint their lives and on who they are and the amount of empathy that they can have and compassion that they can give. I think all of that is drawn through tough moments within your life. And if you are to say, oh, I hear all the time, if there was a God, why would he let certain things happen? once again, we're thinking finite, and we're mm-hmm. thinking that this is a finite moment where the relationship is no longer truly exists after this. How dare we want to learn something mm-hmm. that could be short or long within this timeline? Mm-hmm. And if we're willing to let our kids grow through pain, why would not the one who essentially loves us the most or provides mm-hmm. all options for us to let us go through that same growth? Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's like you said, it's taking ourselves further back to look at it and say, okay, maybe mm-hmm. there is a greater plan per se. And mm-hmm. for myself, it's an interesting statement because I grew up in a very religious home. I would say mm-hmm. I'm very spiritual, but I do not follow a strict religion. Mm-hmm. So I love that idea. I think that's a very important thing. And I think for those who are able to find that within their lives, within certain religions, I think that's an incredible mm-hmm. position. Mm-hmm. How fortunate in many
yeah.
ways.
Yeah. And a lot of times we bring this up in the recovery circles. I'm part of that. Pain is always there. Suffering is optional. Right. And a lot of times we create suffering and we say, oh, this is hard and all of this, but it's, yeah, you can choose otherwise too.
Well,
and to your point, yes, sometimes we have to watch the full thing play out, whether it's the movie or our existence, before we can conclude that, okay, this was suffering. We don't see the wisdom behind it. Right. And that's what I was saying. I have so many of these moments now where I'm like, ah, I didn't get this result I wanted. Before, I would just sit with it and just kick myself. But now it's okay. I know I didn't get this result, but there is something better. There is some wisdom here. And
yes,
99% of the time, the wisdom is there. And sometimes I'm not going to see it, and that's okay. But that's where that trust comes in, right? So, yeah, everything's happening for a reason.
The best part is you go through that lesson again. Yeah. You go through that lesson again and again until you actually find what you're supposed to get from it. And it's a remarkable beauty of life.
Yes. Yeah. And that goes back to what you were sharing with your son, right? Don't worry about the future of what's going to happen or not going to happen. Just be in the present and live the best you can, right? And I think that's something I remind myself every day, is like, how can I make the most of today and work towards the things I need to work towards? But if I'm worried about tomorrow, then I'm not living today. And this is pretty cliche, but yeah, I'm just paralyzing myself, right? By focusing on something that is not in my control at all. So many things can change.
Absolutely. Yeah. We need to farm in the good things of our lives.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. We got through this. It was much like the walk and the run that you were sharing. So
yeah,
made it work. Any last parting thoughts?
Yeah, I think as society continues to, in some ways, seem more difficult, make sure you're, as we all go out there, you're looking for those shining moments. Because much like the night sky, there's all that black, and we need to make sure that we're seeing mm-hmm. the stars when we can.
Mm-hmm. Or be that light for someone else.
I really appreciate the time. Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Why not?
Yeah.
It takes nothing for you to be kind and courteous.
Absolutely. I appreciate you as always. I really appreciate our conversations and the things we get into. That's always a pleasure speaking with you.
Always a pleasure, Ferg. And we'll see you in the woods, buddy.
Yeah. Looking forward to it.
All right.
Thank you for checking out this episode with Kirk. As always, please subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or YouTube. That's the best and easiest way to support this podcast. And on Apple and Spotify, you can leave up to a 5-star review. Please check out the sponsors in the description, as well as the Easy Reflections newsletter, a zero-cost newsletter that goes out weekly, where I explore different mental health topics and provide practical tips and insights for the reader. The link to the newsletter can be found in the show note captions, where you can subscribe directly. Thank you again, and until next time.